The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order state and local government operations, reform, technology, and elections. The first bill on the agenda is House File 162, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen, I would have preferred that the chair of the subcommittee make the appropriate motion, but Representative Nelson is not here, so Representative Pop, we can't. We don't have a quorum yet. We do not have a quorum. So Representative Hansen, would you explain your bill, and when we have a quorum, we'll begin to make the motions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 162 is a product of a drainage work group. Drainage law is old law in Minnesota, and it's often contentious law. But going back about 4 years ago, we began looking at the drainage law with a buffer system report. And as a result of that, we have brought stakeholders together, groups ranging from the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union to the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, the counties, the drainage inspectors, the conservation groups, a wide range of people with a stake in drainage. And the way they operate is as a consensus recommendations looking at how to update and improve the drainage law to make it work in today's world. So House File 162, it's actually a low House file number. This was introduced last year. These are the 2008 recommendations, not the 2009 recommendations. We did add, and I think this is maybe something for the committee, the drainage stakeholder coordination. We actually acknowledge the work that the Board of Water and Soil Resources is doing with the stakeholder group. That was added in the last committee. Just to go, I do have Al Kane, or I'm supposed to have Al Kane here from the Board of Water and Soil Resources, but counties and watershed districts are considered drainage authorities. And so there are changes that have been made over the years to statute. What you will see as we go through the bill is bringing some of the language and the nomenclature into consistency. So we're referring to the drainage authorities rather than just watershed districts, counties, ditches, ditch law, referring to drainage. I think one good example of the updating that the bill does is on page 3.29 and 3.30. The law had said that when there was a petition and a public hearing, that a fee of $5 plus 30 cents. It's been a long time since stamps were 30 cents. So what we're doing there is instead of acknowledging the cost of the stamps, we're saying that the actual cost for the hearing petition. Those are the types of changes you will see in the bill.
Representative Hansen, I'm going to assume that the division has done its work.
Yep.
And you've done a summary of the bill. We have a quorum. Representative Poppy.
I move adoption of the division report.
All those in favor of moving the adoption of the division report signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Hansen, the bill is now before us. And as I understand it, House File 162 would go to the General Register. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Then I will move that House File 162 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Register. And then discussion to the bill as described by Representative Hansen and as already passed by the division. Representative Hansen, do you have someone who wishes to testify, that needs to testify on this bill at this time, that hasn't had the opportunity to testify?
No.
Any member compelled? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 162 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner is not here. This is the second day in a row we've had a member who's had a bill on the agenda that isn't in the room. So we'll put Representative Gardner's bill off, and I will go to Representative Peterson. I saw you earlier. Mm-hmm. There she is. And Representative Poppy.
Mr. Chair, I move the division report.
Representative Poppy moves the division report on Senate File 2309. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate File 2309. Representative Peterson, you have a request as to where this bill will go. What is your request?
Actually, my request is that it would go to the floor.
To the General Register?
Mm-hmm.
I will then move that Senate File 2309 be recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register. Representative Peterson, two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I have with me today two members of my city council, and one is Chief Link, and the other one is Mr. Johnson, who's a human resources director. This issue applies only to two cities in the state of Minnesota, New Hope, Minnesota, and East Grand Forks. Very unique, and they will explain the issue, but it deals with the lengthening of the probationary period for newly hired peace officers.
Representative Peterson, this bill was heard in division, was it not?
Yes.
And did these gentlemen get an opportunity to testify at that time?
Yes, they did.
Then, Representative Peterson, if you would just briefly and very briefly describe the bill, and if we have a question that would be pertinent to these two gentlemen, we will direct it at that point. But I would respect the work that the division has done, and if we have an issue here, then we'll make sure that issue is addressed at the time. So if you can just give us a very brief description of the bill, and then we'll see if there are any questions.
Okay. Actually, New Hope and East Grand Forks are the two cities who only have a six-month period for probation for their peace officers. And actually, it's not enough time to really be able to judge whether they have the ability to fill the position. And in fact, they had one peace officer who they hired who got sick in that period of time, and then when the six-month period, he didn't have the ability to finish his probationary period, and they couldn't hire him. So there is no disagreement here with the unions. Everybody's in agreement. The League of Cities, Minnesota Cities, Ann Finn was there to testify. Everybody's in agreement that we need to change this particular statute to be in compliance with the rest of the cities in the state. It would go to a year.
Members, any questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Peterson, did you make any contact with East Grand Forks, and if so, did they decline being included on this so that we take care of the two that are currently exempt?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Chief Link to answer that question.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Gary Link, Chief of Police for New Hope. Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, committee members, I have been in constant contact with Chief Mike Hedlund of the East Grand Forks Police Department. He has communicated with his city council and the state representative and senator from his area and with his unions and peace officers there, and they are in support of this proposed bill.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question would be then, why don't we include them in the bill if they're in support of it?
Well, Representative Lanning, was this discussion had in division? All right. Hang on one second. Ms. Dyson.
Chair Pulaski and Representative Lanning, this is a general law statute that's being amended, so any city that operates under this statute would be included, so East Grand Forks is included.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you. That clarifies.
Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Peterson, do you have anyone else that feels they need to testify at this time?
No, I don't. Thank you.
All right. Members, I will then move that Senate File 2309 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, he has not returned, or he hasn't arrived, I guess. House File 2729, Representative Slocum. Representative Poppy.
I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Poppy moves adoption of the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Slocum, House File 2729. I will move that to the General Register.
Thank you.
And two-year bill.
My bill is very straightforward, Mr. Chair and members, and I thank you for hearing it. It's about the city of Richfield specifically and only, and it's about a response time for my firefighters, 10 minutes for 10 years. So when a firefighter is hired in Richfield, for the first 10 years of their employment, they must live within 10 minutes of the fire station. 10 minutes would include Edina, Bloomington, Richfield, Minneapolis as places for a firefighter to live. And the reason, and this also has a sunset of 7 years, so at the end of the 7-year period it would be evaluated again to see if it's been effective or not. And the reason for this bill is to save full-time firefighter jobs for the city of Richfield. Richfield has a professional firefighting service. They're the people that are on the fire department are professionals, career firefighters, and this will save full-time firefighter jobs.
All right, and Representative Slocum, there was testimony taken in division.
Yes, there was, and it was passed unanimously.
And the individuals here had the opportunity to testify at that time?
Yes.
All right. Discussion to the bill. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I see that, you know, has this been a problem for you? And the other question is, this limits your ability to do candidate searches for your firefighters because of that restriction of those 10 minutes. So I just want to be certain that you are still able to attract the best and most qualified with that kind of defining limitation. And has this been a problem for you in the past that has caused any harm to citizens by not having that 10 minutes in place?
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I am going to allow my fire chief to answer that question. He is certainly more expert than I am.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. My name is Brad Svem. I'm the Richfield Fire Chief. I think it was a two-part question. First of all,
Could you just spell your last name for us?
Svem. S like in Sam, V like in Victor, E U M as in Mary.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. In answer to your first part of your question regarding is this a problem, we are a small career department. Our on-duty staffing that we are able to support financially takes care of most of our day-in, day-out operations. However, you know, 100, 150 times a year, that on-duty staff is overwhelmed either because of structure fires, simultaneous events, mutual aid partners such as to the Edina house explosion yesterday, and we rely on then our off-duty people to be recalled to work to fill in the stations to either for additional runs or supplement the crew that's on duty at the event they're at. Over the years, our number of people living close that can respond back quickly has dwindled significantly as the residency legislation was changed back, I believe, in the mid-80s. We started to see that decline. We're at the point now we don't have too many people that live close, so to get back in time to support our staff. So, yes, we're experiencing or seeing a problem there. The second part of your question as far as limiting our pool, it would not limit this, if you want to call it a residency requirement, for not limits that they have to live there to apply. Anyone could still apply and go through the interview process if they're selected, which, again, always look for the best, most qualified folks. The requirement for the position would have to be to move within that 10-minute response time.
Representative Kiffmeyer. Further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, why just Richfield? Will we have other suburbs and cities asking for the same thing down the road?
Mr. Swan.
A lot of the cities, especially in the metro area, there's a few that are small, the smaller cities, that have career staffing, unlike Minneapolis and St. Paul, large departments, where they're fortunate enough they can staff for most everything. They don't rely on off-duty people. There's a few other smaller departments. Edina, St. Louis, Park would be some examples of career departments. They do have what would be called a paid-on-call supplemental backup or staffing, or you have the general paid-on-call departments or volunteer, is oftentimes known as. Those volunteer or paid-on-call firefighters are not subject, or the cities are not subject to a residency restriction on those folks. So
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 2729 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Hilty. And while he's getting up there, Representative Poppy.
I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Poppy moves adoption of the division report. All those, any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Hilty. What's the motion on your bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 2797 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
All right. To your bill.
Mr. Chair, members, the bill simply adds two entities to the, as members can see in the bill, relatively long list of units of government that are eligible to participate in joint powers agreements. Bill as introduced added federally recognized Indian tribes to this list, and it was amended in the local government division to include the Minnesota Historical Society as well. The reason that this is necessary is that particularly in a time of the increased necessity for innovation and cooperation amongst local units of government. We want to make sure that tribal units are able to participate fully in those agreements. I don't believe there's any controversy surrounding this bill. It is supported by the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties. And frankly, Mr. Chair, I think it's kind of a no-brainer that these entities should be included in the list.
Members' discussion to the bill. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just a little bit puzzled here, though, sometimes by the addition, mainly is that when I think of joint powers, I think of within the United States, within the state of Minnesota, we have those powers functioning that have that kind of standing. So federally recognized Indian tribe, I mean, many times those are the same entities within a county, within another jurisdiction. So isn't there the potential here for some confusion in regards to who's in charge, therefore who has the authority to do some of these things?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I believe the very nature of a joint powers agreement is that those issues are spelled out in the agreement. I do have with me, if you're interested in testimony from a witness who testified in local in the local government division, Mr. Tad Johnson, representing the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, who could testify as to the particular condition that gave rise to this request, and also more generally the kinds of situations to which it would apply.
Representative Kiffmeyer, do you need to have that testimony today?
Yes, that would be good, Mr. Chairman.
All right, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tad Johnson. I'm an attorney with the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. Representative Kiffmeyer, in response to your question, there's a Northern Lights Express alliance that is where there's a proposed railway being built between the Twin Cities and Duluth. It goes near Hinckley, Minnesota, where part of the Mille Lacs Reservation is. We were invited to join the NLX alliance, and where we paid $48,000 to become a member, which was actually more than Pine County had to pay. Mm-hmm. However, because we are not, Indian tribes are not in the joint power statute, we don't get a vote. And so we kind of checked with our attorneys and with the we've chatted over the years with the state attorney general's office, and one solution to a whole number of problems is for tribes to be included in this. A second one is barbers that work on the reservation, for example. Some of their time cutting hair on the reservation is not counted towards their licensure in the state of Minnesota because they're on a reservation. When we chatted with the Attorney General's office a couple years ago on this, they said if you could just stick tribes in the joint powers statute, we could work all this out. And since we Since the bill got introduced, a number of tribes have come forward with various agreements they would like to enter into with their counties on everything from emergency response to various other matters. So this solves a whole bunch of problems. And one example, the state legislature several years ago allowed tribes to have law enforcement agreements with counties, and Indian tribes could have law enforcement agreements together. That's worked out very well between us and Mille Lacs County and Pine County, and we now provide somewhere between $1.3 and $2 million a year in resources to provide law enforcement to not only tribal members but non-Indians in the county. So we believe that by being part of this act, we can help provide solutions to tribal members and non-Indian folks in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Further discussion? Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you mentioned that in the...
I'm sorry. Did I say Kelly? I apologize.
It's okay. It happens.
Still early.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I believe I heard you say that the Historical Society was added in the subcommittee. Could you give me a little background as to why that was happening or why the Historical Society is included in this?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I do have Mr. Kelleher from the representing the Minnesota Historical Society, who's probably better able to address that than I.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Out at Fort Snelling, if you know that area, the historic fort, as distinct from the upper post, is an area that needs some help. That the upper post is owned by the Department of Natural Resources, and a number of agencies have worked on the redevelopment of that area. There's been some preliminary discussion of forming a joint powers agreement to do some redevelopment in that area. And when we looked at the possibility of the Historical Society, which is a sort of a quasi-state agency, entering into a joint powers agreement, it was unclear whether we were able, under this statute, to enter into a joint powers agreement. So we requested that the law be clarified to specifically include us to make it clear that we could enter into a joint powers agreement, and that's why we're requesting to be included in the bill.
Representative Sanders? Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Hilty, to your motion.
Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 2797 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Atkins. Representative Poppe.
I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Poppe moves adoption of the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Atkins, I believe this goes to House File 3017, would be sent to Commerce and Labor.
It's been requested by Commerce and Labor.
All right. I assume it'll get a friendly reception there. I'll make that motion. So the bill's before us. Representative Atkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The bill enjoyed unanimous voice support in the committee and no opposition. The testifiers are here to answer questions, but don't feel the need to provide further testimony in light of the committee action. What this bill does is it is associated with the Fill the Boot campaign. I don't know if they have that in Winona or in your various districts, but firefighters, while on duty but during their downtime, will raise money for the Muscular Dystrophy Association 1, 2, 3 days a year at most. And they literally hold their fire boot and raise money. It started as a effort that raised about $30,000 in 2006. Last year it yielded over $300,000. It's been proven to be very effective, but lately a couple of cities have expressed some reservations, not about the cause and how worthy it is, but the fact that there's been no express legislative authority to do so, and an insurance piece that we're going to figure out, or that we think we figured out, but that'll be addressed in the Commerce Committee.
The bill would allow for cities permissively to do this, subject to city council approval, and lays out certain requirements for it that would limit the use of it. With that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions or concerns that members may have, Mr. Chairman.
Members, any questions? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I look at this and I read the, you know, the, like you said, it's the cause and all of those issues, but the language of the bill is very, very open. In other words, the charitable organization, though I know you do the muscular dystrophy organization, are referencing it here verbally in particular, but the actual legislation is very, very broad. And, you know, the concern I would have is I know the firefighters are busy and have a lot of things to be doing. I don't want any undue pressure on them. There are many good causes that might be able to think that this would be a great opportunity. So is there some balance here to make sure that they are also protected from being put in some uncomfortable situations?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, there is that balance. First off, we believe in local control and that we shouldn't demand that cities only work with the Muscular Dystrophy Association, so they've not been expressly identified. But it does, as you'll note from the bill, need to be a 501c3 organization. It can only be one organization annually, and at most it can only be up to 3 days. The goal being that there would not be undue pressure upon the firefighters or any other, it doesn't just limit it to firefighters, but any other city employee to participate in such an effort.
Further discussion? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think the big issue with this, and this was a local issue in our area, is that the firefighters were right in traffic, coming up to people, stopped, going in amongst kind of cars and stuff, and people were having, I mean, they saw that as kind of a dangerous situation. And I see there's nothing in here. I don't know how you exactly do that without creating somewhat of a dangerous situation depending on how it's done. And I think that's the big concern here, is that I know motorists felt, you know, they'd be parked and someone's coming up to them and they don't even know maybe what it's about, or they see someone in uniform and think there's something up ahead. So I suppose each city would have to determine that, but my huge concern with something like that is safety, and just does the public know what's happening here? But if you come up on an area where there's a number of cars and there's people jumping out and around and, and I don't know how cities, I don't know how you do that, but this doesn't really address that. And I guess each city, I suppose, would have to. But that's the, isn't this the main concern?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, you actually answered your own question. We had that issue come up in the division as well, and you'll notice we expressly did not lay out how cities can, or what requirements they can make of their employees with respect to how they do it. If a particular city wants to say you got to fill the boot at the mall and you can't be out on the roads, they have every right to do that. But we didn't want to start, you know, to the extent you start laying out specifics in terms of how cities can do their respond with respect to the safety questions. So we didn't do that, but cities would certainly permissively have the ability to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
You know, the bill does specifically on line 1.9 talk about contributions from motorists. So that's why I'm thinking the roadways rather than the malls. And I mean, that's my big concern. And I know cities feel there's probably going to be a liability with that if, in fact, they're on public roadways. And I think that's still the big issue that has to be
Representative Atkins, you are. This is going to Commerce and Labor, where I assume this issue will be discussed in more detail. But
that specific issue will be discussed in greater detail relative to the insurance issue. But also, most importantly, and I hope I emphasized it at the outset, is cities don't have to allow for this. It just provides that they can if they desire to, and if they've got a relationship with the MDA, the firefighters, where they desire to move forward with that.
Representative Gubba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for the bill's author. Help enlighten me. Why does the state legislature need to take action on something like this? I served on a city council for 9 years, and it seems kind of odd that we'd have to take state legislative action to make this happen. It seems like kind of common sense sort of stuff. Maybe you can enlighten me.
Representative Atkins, we're all waiting for that one. And depending on how you answer it, we may repeat that answer numerous times during the session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwald, we're kind of wondering, too, but we give, obviously, great regard to the concerns and so forth of our communities. I know the city of Minneapolis, city of Duluth, perhaps others, have indicated that there wasn't express statutory authorization to allow for this, and it made them nervous. So we're just trying to make their nervousness go away.
We're just here to help.
Further discussion? All right. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3017 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Commerce and Labor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Gardner is here. Representative Poppe.
I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Poppe moves adoption of the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Gardner, I will move that House File 418 be recommended to pass, and you want it sent to the General Register. Is that correct?
That is
or does
correct,
it need to go
Chair,
somewhere
it's
else?
Already been to, it's already been to Agriculture last year. So.
All right, so that will be my motion to the General Register. Representative Gardner, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your patience. I had to get a kid off to the bus this morning at 8:20. Mr. Chair, House File 418 gives a municipality the authority to adopt an ordinance to control and eradicate buckthorn, which is a weed that has been very pervasive here in the metro area in particular. The authority would be similar to what was used for oak wilt to help municipalities combat the spread of that plant. We discussed it in more detail in division. I'd be happy to provide more detail if you'd like, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner, we're respecting the work of the division, and unless there's a specific problem or issue with the bill, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a concern in regards to this because of private property. And I certainly understand some of these issues. I know this is May language. Nonetheless, it's still here in a statute. And I want to make sure that there's a balance here. I realize it's a noxious weed, but we also have people who own their property. And so how have you sought to have some, the problem is we're going to vote on a may, and depends upon how they may do this, how are they going to protect the rights of private property owners at the same time as they're accomplishing a good thing, eradicating a noxious weed?
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the impetus for the bill actually came from residents of the city of North Oaks, which is actually all private property. And so even the roads up to the center line are private property. So the issue that you raise is of prime concern in that community where they don't really like government much at all. But to answer your question, you know, if a city council is doing something where they're actually going on private property, that's certainly something that the voters would hold their elected officials accountable for. But the idea here is that the we've got about half the households in North Oaks who have voluntarily agreed to remove or control buckthorn on their own properties. If there was an ordinance, it would be something of the variety that, you know, you would have to have buckthorn controlled on your property. You wouldn't actually have somebody coming on your property, but I suppose that's possible.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, but this doesn't say control of buckthorn on North Oaks. It says control of buckthorn for the whole state of Minnesota. And so, you know, easy in North Oaks, you kind of explained it, you know. But again, they're a city. They have an ordinance. They have that situation anyway, so why do we even need to be doing this is obviously not just a North Oaks issue. And so we have a lot of rural Minnesota, a lot of private property that aren't set up like North Oaks. And so first of all, it seems like city ordinances have the ability to work this through anyway, and that North Oaks certainly does. And I think the legislature maybe is stepping into something here, and I don't see any balancing protection here for private property owners other than North Oaks.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I again would just state that, you know, if a city council is in the eyes of the voters of their city, feel that they're going beyond the bounds of what they should be doing, there certainly is some accountability there. I know that most of the issues related to government employees and private property tend to have to do with state employees rather than local employees. But again, with with the accountability mechanisms with a local ordinance, the voters can certainly find some accountability through their elected officials.
Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, with all due respect to that, like I've said on the previous bill, I served 9 years on a city council. This is broad authority. This is very broad authority. A city council can sit down, pass an ordinance, and they have unlimited access under this, unless somebody can tell me otherwise, to private property for the purposes of controlling noxious weeds. That's pretty broad authority. I mean, they could come on and spray. They could begin cutting. I've had to deal with some buckthorn myself on a friend's property, and it's tough stuff. But this kind of exposure and breaching of private property rights, I think, is not appropriate. This is the Government Operations Committee, where we need to talk about good government versus not-so-good government. Mr. Chair, if it would be in order, I would move to strike the words "and private" on line 1.10.
Representative Gutwald, you're making that in a
motion. I'm making that a motion, yes.
All right. I'm going to ask that Ms. Dyson make sure that she has that, and then she can explain it to us so we all understand what that motion means, and then we'll have the author speak to the motion. Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members, the motion...
Mr. Chair and members, the motion is in House File 418 on line 1.10, delete, and private.
And Ms. Dyson, what does that do to the bill?
Mr. Chair and members, it leaves in the bill the authority of a municipality to adopt an ordinance to control buckthorn on public property within its geographic boundaries.
Representative Gardner? Let's let the author respond to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just argue that the issue of buckthorn is so pervasive that if you don't deal with it within the entire geographic boundary of a city, you're not going to really be able to abate the nuisance, because once the berries come out, the birds eat them, they excrete them, and then you have the spread. So if you have this checkerboard pattern across the municipality, you're not really going to solve the problem. I was trying to think of a good euphemism there, Mr. Chair.
We appreciate you did not. Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, I acknowledge the difficulty. Like I said, I'm very familiar with buckthorn, but I think we need, especially, again, from the purview of this committee, to give due consideration to the private property rights of people. We need to find another way to do this, and in a lot of cases in some of the county conservation programs and so forth, they are working with private property owners, with their permission, with their buy-in, to try to eradicate buckthorn. But that's very different than giving a municipality the unilateral authority to pass an ordinance and simply march onto your property and do whatever they want to eradicate buckthorn. So we need to find a different way, would be my suggestion. I think violating private property rights in this way is just a bit of a sledgehammer.
Members, we're on the Gutwald Amendment. Rep. Sam Khan, to the amendment.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I assume that buckthorn is not listed on the state list of noxious weeds, because I believe that on the state list of noxious weeds, the state has this authority to do for any noxious weed, that there's no respect of private property, even for such innocent things as industrial hemp. The state could just go through and take the whole thing and take the whole thing out. And so, you know, I would suggest that it would become totally meaningless if we took the "and private" in. The idea is, as Mr. Gardner has said, so, and the problem is that the private property is impinging on other private property by having this. That's kind of what the biological concept of noxious weeds are. So I would hope that we would join with Representative Gardner and vote this amendment down.
Representative Gutwald, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask for a roll call on this vote.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Biskins, I've got you on the list, but I had you there prior to the amendment. So do you wish to speak to the amendment? Or?
No, I don't, Mr. Chair.
All right. Further discussion to the amendment. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative Khan raised an interesting question. Is, in fact, this weed buckthorn on the state list of noxious weeds? I think we need to know that.
Well, Representative Gardner, this bill has been through how many committees?
Mr. Chair, it went through Representative Atremba's Ag Policy Committee last year, and it went through Representative Nelson's local division Monday.
And has this issue arisen in those two committees so that you could answer it at this time?
Mr. Chair, what I can say is I originally had a more stringent bill, which would have, I want to say the word was restricted weed. I'm not sure that's the right word, which would have required its removal pretty much everywhere. And the local government said, this is a terrible unfunded mandate. We don't want to handle it that way. Please let us have a permissive piece of legislation like House File 418 that would allow cities to do it if they want to.
All right. Further discussion, Representative Sterner, to the amendment.
Just on the amendment, basically, you know, my experience with local government is the mayor is the weed inspector of the city and has the rights to be the weed inspector. So I'm just feeling that the local government, they have dealt with it on private property and public property, not just weeds.
Right. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Anderson?
No.
Biskins?
Aye.
Potwell?
For the amendment?
This is for the amendment. Yes, this is the roll call on your amendment.
Guilty?
No.
Hornstein?
No.
Hahn?
No.
Kiffmeyer?
Yes.
Lanning?
Yes.
Marquardt?
No.
Marl? Nelson?
Yes. No.
Members, this is to the amendment, not to the bill.
Hoppe?
No.
Sanders?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Sterner?
No.
Anderson changes from no to yes.
No to yes.
All right, there being nine nays and six ayes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. So to the bill. Further discussion. Yep. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that last amendment, we did have a solution that we actually passed off the House floor last year, if you recall, when the weed inspection bill came up, that the weed inspectors in walking on private property would wear a vest, like a DEA vest, that had the acronyms for Weed Inspection and Mitigation Program, Mr. Chair, if you recall that.
Weed
Mitigation. But, Mr. Chairman,
thank
to
you,
the bill.
Yeah, my pleasure. Refreshing our memories.
Thank you. To the bill itself, Representative Gardner, Representative Kahn brought up a good point, and that is that we do have a noxious weed registry, all right, that is designated by the commissioner. Now, Representative Gardner, maybe I'm missing something, but I'm looking at state statute right now, and we do not list a single noxious weed in state statute. This would be a precedent that we start listing in statute a weed that is noxious. And so I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about why we're making an end run around the commissioner and not allowing the commissioner to simply add buckthorn to the noxious weed registry and what the commissioner's issues and points may be. And the reason I say that, Representative Gardner, is because we are beholden to our constituents. We're beholden to the mood of our constituents. And if Representative Gardner Tubby Smith ever does bring the Gophers to the Final Four in the championship game and we're playing Kentucky, I'd hate to see the legislature list Kentucky bluegrass as a noxious weed, just to make a point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kahn.
Just to put a little biological knowledge into this, Kentucky bluegrass would never be a noxious weed because it doesn't grow very well here.
True.
Further discussion. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 418 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, I think he's here. Chair. There he is. Representative Mahoney. Representative Poppy.
I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Poppy moves adoption of the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Report is adopted. Representative Mahoney, I believe that House File 2945 is to go to Commerce and Labor?
That is my belief, sir.
All right. I will make that motion. And then Representative Mahoney, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, if I could get some direction. This has been in division. I can explain the whole bill and bring all the witnesses through, or I can explain the bill and just...
Representative Mahoney, we are trying to respect the work of the division. If members have a particular question on the bill, if you want to just give us a brief overview of what the bill does, but I don't think we need to repeat in entirety all of the testimony. So if you can sum up the bill for us briefly and what the issue is. And if we have an individual that needs to testify as a result of a question from the committee, we'll bring them down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2945 is a bill which deals with a Supreme Court decision called Morris versus Sachs. Morris versus Sachs eliminated municipal maintenance and rental codes in all cities in the state of Minnesota. This bill, we had a working group all summer long trying to come to some agreement and compromise. They did not. I could explain a lot about that, but I won't. What this bill does is change some language in Section 326B.121, which is the code enforcement, state building code enforcement. One of the suggestions of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, and you'll see it on page 1, line 19, it changed when it deals with municipalities, it changes the wording on 1.19. Different from to in conflict what with. A quick explanation is the state building code calls for plywood flooring in a new home. What this language means is that a city can not ask for anything more than plywood. It could not ask for cementitious hardboard, which is what you would use for ceramic tile. On page 2, in line 2.32, it adds the words when it talks about municipalities adopting ordinances related to, in language already, is zoning, subdivision, or planning, unless the ordinance conflicts with. What this adds to on page 2, line 3.2, property maintenance and rental licensing. Members, what we have right now, and you're getting some things passed out, a list of rental units by county and by major cities, and you're also getting a letter from the Organization of Building Officials. Right now, there is a significant amount of confusion and concern in cities that they cannot go in and require preventive maintenance in rental properties. You can't tell someone to repair a window sash that's broken, because with this Supreme Court decision, the window is part of the component, the frame is still there, so it's part of the component. Heating, you can't go in and tell a landlord to maintain the furnace. You can't tell the landlord that the chimney is falling down until it has actually fallen down. I should phrase it this way. You can't tell the landlord that they have to maintain the chimney until the chimney has actually fallen down. And that's because the state building code is a reactive code, not a maintenance or preventive maintenance code. I have about 4 pages of remarks. I have a half a dozen people here ready to testify or answer questions. I think the opponents to this bill have about the same. So I will answer any questions.
Discussion. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I respect the work of the division, but nonetheless, I have a vote on this committee, and I want it to be an informed and educated vote. And that is not exactly easy to do when we are not afforded the opportunity to hear the same information as the division. And I would like to be able to at least hear, I've noticed here on the list of testifiers on our agenda, that we have City of Minneapolis, League of Minnesota Cities, the North Metro Mayors Association, the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. What I don't see here is any construction entities that are going to have to live with this change. And so I am wondering if some of them are present, and I would suspect that maybe...
Tim Kiffmeyer, someone's waving in the audience.
Can't see.
In a, well, I know it's behind you, but I do see the wave, and apparently represents a construction entity. So if she would like to come down and address your question or concern...
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right. Thank you for helping me to have my eyes in the back.
That's what we try to do. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Pam Perry Weaver. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Builders Association of Minnesota. We represent the residential construction industry, and we are intimately involved with the development of the building code and building to the building code. We are certainly respectful of what Representative Mahoney is trying to accomplish with this bill, and many of my members sit through hours of building code discussions to develop it. We are unfortunately opposed to line 1.19 because we do believe that it allows a municipality to go ahead and require any item outside of the building code. This Minnesota Supreme Court case was very, very clear. It created a bright line for builders who build to this code regularly to understand what they can, what a city can and cannot do. I find it interesting that the law prohibits a municipality to require anything, even in a development agreement, that is different from the building code. Yet, my members do a lot of business with cities, and they routinely require things outside of the building code in development agreements. And so we were really pleased with the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision that says that a municipality cannot require anything that is different from the state building code. They made it really clear. I don't understand why the cities want to make it murky again. It's already really hard to sue a city. Mr. Grundhofer does a great job to protect the League of Minnesota Cities from being sued on these types of issues, but boy, making the language murky again would make it difficult for us. Having said that, the idea of allowing a municipality to adopt a property maintenance code, we think that's a great idea. The International Code Council, which is the council that writes the base code, has created a property maintenance code that works in conjunction with the International Residential Code, so we would support municipalities having the ability to adopt that. As a matter of fact, some cities I know have already done it without legislative requirements. So. I guess we would just oppose the addition or the change of this language from different from to in conflict with. In conflict with is too fuzzy. That's our testimony. Thank you.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate that, and especially I was concerned also about line 232, so it helps give clarity to that, and I appreciate that very much. But I do think having state building codes and the amount of work that already goes on and the workmanship with that, to hold to that, and then on line 232. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to divide this bill.
No.
Can we do that in committee?
Representative Kiffmeyer, yes, you certainly may. I would hope that you would clarify exactly what you want to do, and Ms. Dyson then will make sure we understand what you want to do and if it works.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman, then I would divide the bill between line 2.30 and 2.31. And I would like to take action first on the 2.31 to 2.34, if possible.
Ms. Dyson, do you have the amendment?
It doesn't work.
Let's let Ms. Dyson explain.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure of the procedurally, but it sounds like what Representative Kiffmeyer is proposing is to vote on whether or not to, I'm not quite clear on this, because it's not really a divisible thing. It's whether you vote on the two different changes, but it's all one section.
Okay.
If Yeah, I think it's a different motion you
Representative
need to make.
Kiffmeyer, and this is where, again, when we're going to do a complicated amendment on the fly, and people have had time to prepare, I think you know the course we're headed for here. So what exactly do you want to do to the bill? You said divide it. Do you want to remove a section of the bill? And if so, what section of the bill? And then can you be more specific? So if House Research doesn't know what you're doing, I'm really uncomfortable doing it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that instruction. And having listened to the advice here, I realize that in regards to making things most clear, that if we would instead go to line 1.19 and just restore the original language.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members, the motion would be on page 1, line 19, reinstate different from and delete in conflict with.
All right. That will be Representative Kiffmeyer's motion to amend the bill. You'll withdraw whatever that earlier motion was that no one understood, and we'll go to this one, and then we'll let the author of the bill react to the motion.
Members, Mr. Chair, members, the purpose for in conflict with is to allow that the cities to have some flexibility in what they're trying to keep their building maintenance up to. And it also is the it protects the state building code so that you don't you have a way to move within that building code, but you don't have the ability to go beyond what the building code is. Different makes it very restrictive. If it's you can't be different from, you can't require grass mowing because that's not in the building code.
All right. I've got the list growing here. Representative Simon, to the amendment.
Yes, it is to the amendment. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, forgive me, I'm just not real knowledgeable about the state building code. Is the state building code usually, is it a minimum standard, or can it sometimes be a maximum standard?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simons, it is the minimum. It is what the base of where you can go to. So you can't, it's a safety code, and that's what it always was supposed to be, but it has morphed into the bare minimum of what you can do.
Representative Simon.
So, for example, Representative Mahoney, based on just the safety concern that you mentioned, a city can do more than what you're envisioning is a city being able to do more than the building code allows if safety, for example, is the motivating factor.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, that is correct. And as I used the example of the chimney earlier, a heating plant will create water and acid when it burns natural gas. It destroys the concrete in a chimney liner. And if under the building code, you could not require a landlord or a property owner to go out and tuck point that chimney, just can't do it, until the actual chimney is falling off of the roof. Then the building code would come into play and say, your chimney is falling down, you need to replace it. So that's why the in conflict would allow the city to say, you have to tuck point that chimney.
Representative Simon.
Just a quick follow-up, and again, it's just my lack of knowledge maybe, but Ms. Weaver held up the that book that she showed us, and she said that some municipalities are adopting this. Could you speak to that? Is that a potential way around this, or do you see it as not a potential way around this?
All right, Representative Mahoney, we're still on the amendment, yep. But okay.
Quickly, in the end, that's a good starting point for cities. And hopefully the state, because it becomes problematic with this, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry. The state's building codes are adopted on a cycle. And once they're adopted in that cycle, it takes about 24 months to implement that code, to put it into law. And because of the current budget problem, the department is a little worried that they may not have the money to do this cycle, which would put that code into effect in 2013. it could easily slip to 2016 before that code could be installed. That is actually a pretty good code, would work just fine with a few amendments, and I certainly hope the state in the end does adopt that, but that's the problem. And Mr. Chair, to correct Mr. Representative Simon's question about the code, it's a minimum maximum, so it can't go below. It can't go below that plywood in the kitchen floor. It can't go above that plywood in the kitchen floor. So it's a mini maximum. It's a little bit difficult to explain, but I'm not going to try and take up a ton of time with the
committee. All right, I have a list of folks who want to talk to the amendment. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I fully support the amendment. There's some things that are fuzzy here. While it is a minimum maximum, it's a minimum maximum where government is concerned. It is a minimum where the individual is concerned, and it's the individual who, of course, is building the home. So if an individual wants a more sound structure, wants some press wood under your ceramic tile, they want to be the dummy and do that, well, then they can, I guess. I think it's called the State Building Code for a purpose, and it does give uniformity. I question the State Building Code leading to fire hazards. You know, I think one of the purposes for a State Building Code is to prevent fire hazards, so I do question that. I do question when Representative Mahoney says that changing or restoring the language in 1.19 would then prevent maintenance. 1.19 has nothing to do with maintenance. It's the construction, and I think Representative Mahoney does do a good job of adding the maintenance component on line 2.32. So you're going to have a statewide building code. Let's have a statewide building code. All right. If we're not going to have one, then let's just get rid of it rather than put in fuzzy language which allows every city to do whatever they want anyway. I think that's the decision we have before us today. I support Representative Giffmeyer's amendment.
Representative Gutwall, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the amendment, I'm curious I guess I'm speaking more to the first half and not the second half, so I'll hold my question.
Let's just do one thing at a time, and the motion before us is the amendment. Representative Giffmeyer, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I do believe that the issues that have been brought up here are more maintenance-related, and I think preserving the state building code as just that, a state building code, and that the rest of the bill addresses the other issues that have been brought up that have been testified in support. I think if we restore the language and keep the state building code, that I think that will allow this bill to smoothly move forward and be able to get to the real heart of the matter, which has to do with the maintenance issues. So I ask for your support of my amendment to restore the original language and preserve the state building code.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Chairs in doubt. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. All those opposed? All right, there being 6-4 and 8 opposed, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Mahoney, members, further discussion to the bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might just close with this. This does not affect building codes on new construction. This bill has nothing to do with new construction whatsoever. The in conflict with and the maintenance and the other half of the other part of the bill doesn't affect how someone builds a new house in Savage or Brooklyn Park or Brooklyn Center.
All right. I will renew my motion that House File 2945 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Commerce and Labor Committee. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails.
Minutes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Representative Poppy.
I move the minutes of February 23rd.
Representative Poppy moves the minutes. Discussion, seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Members, we're going to have some lengthy agendas over the next few days, so if folks could get here on time. We are finishing early, but it's going to get a little more complicated. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.